When language has been butchered and bled of meaning, how do we understand public power? When freedom means occupation, when democracy means neoliberal capitalism, when reform means repression, when words like empowerment and peacekeeping make your blood run cold, why then public power could mean whatever you want it to mean, a biceps building machine or a community power shower. So I'll just have to define public power as I go along in my own self-serving sort of way. In India, the word public is now a Hindi word. It means people. In Hindi, we have sarkar and public, the government and the people. Inherent in this use is the underlying assumption that the government is quite separate from the people. This distinction has to do with the fact that India's freedom struggle was magnificent, but by no means revolutionary. The Indian elite stepped easily and elegantly into the shoes of British imperialists. A deeply impoverished, essentially feudal society became a modern, independent nation state. And even today, 57 years on to the day, yesterday was Independence Day, the truly vanquished still look upon the government as my bap, the parent and provider. The somewhat more radical, those who still have fire in their bellies, see it as chore, the thief, the snatcher away of all things. But either way, for most Indians, sarkar is very separate from public. But as you make your way up India's social ladder, the distinction between sarkar and public gets blurred. The Indian elite, like the elite anywhere in the world, finds it hard to separate itself from the state. It sees like the state, it thinks like the state, it speaks like the state. In the United States, on the other hand, the blurring of the distinction between sarkar and public has penetrated far deeper into society. This could be the sign of a robust democracy, but unfortunately, it's a little more complicated and less pretty than that. Among other things, it has to do with the elaborate web of paranoia generated by the US sarkar and spun out by the corporate media and Hollywood. Ordinary Americans have been manipulated into imagining they're a people under siege whose sole refuge and protector is their government. If it isn't the communists, it's the Al-Qaeda. If it isn't Cuba, it's Nicaragua. As a result of this, the most powerful nation in the world, with its unmatchable arsenal of weapons, its history of having waged and sponsored endless wars, and the only nation in history to have actually used nuclear bombs, is peopled by a terrified citizenry jumping at shadows. A people bonded to the state, not by social services or public health care or employment guarantees, but by fear. This synthetically manufactured fear is used to gain public sanction for further acts of aggression. And so it goes, building into a spiral of self-fulfilling hysteria, now formally calibrated by the US government's amazing technicolor terror alerts, fuchsia, turquoise, salmon pink. To outside observers, this merging of sarkar and public in the United States sometimes makes it hard to separate the actions of the US government from the American people. It is this confusion that fuels anti-Americanism in the world. Anti-Americanism is then seized upon and amplified by the US government and its faithful media outlets. You know the routine, why do they hate us, they hate our freedoms, etc., etc. This enhances the sense of isolation among American people and makes the embrace between sarkar and public even more intimate, like Red Riding Hood looking for a cuddle in the wolf's bed. Using the threat of an external enemy to rally people behind you is a tired old horse, which politicians have ridden to power for centuries. But could it be that ordinary people are fed up of that poor old horse and are looking for something different? There's an old Hindi film song that goes, "Ye public hai, ye sab janti hai," which means the public, she knows it all. Wouldn't it be lovely if the song were right and politicians wrong?